disruption zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
Senator Rand Paul joining me now on the Disruption Zone. Senator Paul, how are you this morning? Thanks for coming on.
Great to be with you.
Let's start with yesterday, the Democrats walking the impeachment articles or marching or whatever it was they did over to the Senate. I guess you're thinking probably it's about time if we're going to do this, right?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny. Nancy Pelosi had this great strategy. She was going to try to lecture and browbeat the Senate into doing what she wanted by withholding the articles of impeachment, which we didn't really want. So it's kind of a funny sort of leverage to think that she could make us do what she wanted by not giving us something we didn't want. So in the end, it didn't work, and she marched them on over here. She sent a whole horde of managers for this thing. They're going to come over. But what the American people have seen is that not one Republican voted for this, and not one Republican even voted to inquire about this. So this is purely a partisan exercise. It's them trying to change the election. And I think in the end, it's going to backfire. You know, her holding them for a month actually made it look more like gamesmanship. And so it's going to come over here. I don't think one Republican is going to vote for impeachment. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, then we had this Parnas thing that comes out at the 11th hour, and people are just going, oh, come on. If you sat on this, like, why would you sit on this for hours or for days and days and days? You know, what was the holdup here? I mean, it's just another one of these long line of stories that's supposed to be earth shaking. Turns out it's not that big a deal.
Well, you know, the bottom line is that the Democrats have said that President Trump damaged or threatened national security by withholding foreign aid to a country, the country of Ukraine. And, you know, I just completely disagree with the whole premise of that. I actually think that with a $1 trillion annual deficit, when we give away money we don't have to countries like Ukraine, I think that actually threatens our national security. I've also read the Constitution. I don't see any explicit authority given to Congress to give away money from the American taxpayer to foreign countries. And so I see this completely opposite. I see that he was doing his constitutional duty to be skeptical of giving this money away. He says repeatedly, well, other countries need to be picking up the tab. We need not to be the patsy for the world fighting the wars and paying for all these wars, that maybe Europe should do something. Maybe NATO should do something. And this has been a consistent theme of his. And if they don't like it, they can vote against him. But frankly, I think a lot of American people are tired of wasting so much money overseas. So I think it's actually not as unpopular as they think. And I think this will be remembered as a partisan exercise. So I don't think you're going to get one Republican senator to vote for this.
We're talking with Senator Rand Paul. The president was fully within his legal authority, as you sort of just outlined, in terms of all of this. And the other thing is, there wasn't a quid pro quo because the aid was given. There was nothing withheld. The meeting was granted with the president. And yet there was no announcement that Biden was under investigation, no public announcement by the Ukrainians that he was under investigation, at least nothing until after all of that stuff. So there was no quid pro quo because the president didn't withhold anything.
Well, and this jockeying back and forth between presidents and Congress about spending money has been going on for quite a while. So, you know, Nixon was told to spend money, I think, on the EPA back in the early 70s, and he didn't do it. And so it went to court, and court said he had to do it. And Congress passed something called the Anti-Impoundment Act, which said a president couldn't impound funds beyond the fiscal year. So when this comes to a head in September and August for President Trump, the end of the fiscal year is September 30th. So he asked his advisors, can I hold this money back to try to investigate corruption? And they said, yeah, you can, but by September 30th, you got to give it up one way or another. And so I guess to my mind, using foreign aid as a lever to try to get countries to behave is supposedly why you give foreign aid, right? Is you want them to behave and behave in a less corrupt manner. And so I actually don't care whether or not he was withholding it to try to get an investigation, because really we can't be sending money to countries that are then rewarding our politicians' kids with $50,000 a month. That, to me, on the face of it, is corrupt. And so I do think that the Bidens deserve to be investigated. And if this comes before us, and if there are witnesses, I'm going to demand that we hear from Hunter Biden, that we hear from Joe Biden, and also that we hear from the whistleblower, frankly.
Right. Let me ask you this. I'll read you a tweet that Bernie Sanders tweeted out yesterday regarding all of this Parnas stuff. This is the accusation that President Trump's lawyers, directed by Rudy Giuliani, were surveilling the Ukrainian ambassador because she was getting in the way of their designs, I guess, to have an investigation into Biden. Bernie Sanders tweeted, he said, "It's outrageous that the president's personal lawyers appear to have directed the surveillance of a U.S. ambassador. This must be fully investigated. As the Senate conducts impeachment trial, we have a responsibility to hold this lawless administration to account." Did that really happen? And why wouldn't the president just fire that ambassador? Doesn't don't ambassadors serve at the president's will?
You know, it's hard for me to comment on something. I have no idea who these people are, whether any of this is true. Right. And so I don't know whether somebody wrote something down on a hospital, on a hotel, you know, notepad, something. I don't know if they wrote it yesterday or they wrote it back, you know, 2 years ago. So,
but it was on the napkin.
It's a lot of...
He wrote it on the napkin.
Yeah, it's on a napkin. So, I mean, there's a lot of conjecture as to what any of this means.
Yeah.
But you're right. Ambassadors serve at the will. Even the career ambassadors serve at the will of the president, and they can be let go at any time for really for no reason. I just have no way of knowing whether any of that's true. I do think that the whole impeachment process, though, has been partisan.
Yeah.
And so far, not one Republican has been convinced that it's anything but a partisan witch hunt.
Will you guys call witnesses, or what do you think will happen there? Do you want them to call witnesses?
My opinion is sort of all or none. And right. We either have all the witnesses that both sides want, or we have none. But I think selectively only allowing witnesses that are critical of the president is ridiculous. That's
right.
What they did in the House version. Adam Schiff had veto power over all witnesses. And so they're on TV yesterday saying, "We want witnesses, all relevant witnesses." But they wanted to define what relevant is. And so, you know, if you're a defendant in a trial, the court doesn't say, "Oh, yeah, you can have any witnesses that we deem that you're allowed to have." You know, the defense is always allowed to call whomever they are.
Right.
And if he's accused of falsely bringing up the Bidens because they were his political opponents, I would think he would be allowed to present evidence that the Bidens were corrupt and that there's evidence of their corruption.
Right.
And then people can judge whether it was a good thing to investigate the Bidens for corruption or not. But you'd have to know, one, whether they're corrupt or not. And the mainstream media keeps saying, "Oh, well, it's been investigated. There's no there. There is no corruption with Hunter Biden." And I think it's sort of the opposite. I think if you ask the American people, if a politician's son got $50,000 a month to work for some oligarch in a foreign country and he has no experience in that, do you think it might be corrupt or a conflict of interest? I'll bet you 90% of America believes that, but 99% of the media says, "Oh, there's no there, there's no corruption. It's already been investigated," which is complete crap.
Yeah, believe me, if it were the other foot, if it were Bush's son, you know, there would be hell to pay for sure. So we're talking with Senator Rand Paul. Let's talk about Iran. The strike against Soleimani. In your opinion, was that legal? Did the president have the authority to do that?
Well, here's the thing is my concern is what comes from that. It's, you know, it's hard to mourn, and I don't mourn the death of somebody who at least indirectly was involved in providing weapons that killed our soldiers, you know, during the Iraq War. But I would say that when you kill a general of another country, like Iran in Iraq, without sort of any authorization from Congress, there is always the danger that it leads to a bigger confrontation. So, for example, after he was killed, the Iranians attacked an airbase where we had hundreds of troops. If one of those bombs had killed 50 or 100 Marines, we would have responded in a bigger way, and there's every possibility we would have immediately been at war. So the discussion of war should be done in advance. We shouldn't be sort of drug into war very quickly by something rapidly escalating. we're lucky it didn't happen so far, but I'm not so sure we're out of the woods. I think that there still is a possibility that Iran will look for blood, or the militias will look for blood, and if they do kill Americans in any kind of numbers, I'm afraid then there'll be another response. So I think those decisions about whether we go to war, our founding fathers wanted Congress to know about them. Presidents can respond in an imminent fashion, but I think most people, once upon a time, and I still believe this, that imminent action is to prevent an attack. They're rounding up people to attack the embassy, and, you know, the ringleaders out there in front has weapons, and they're approaching the gate of the embassy. Do we want the Marines to be allowed to shoot the protesters if they're armed and coming at the embassy gates? Yes. If missiles are unlaunched, do we want to be able to stop missiles and or attack a ship that is unleashing missiles at us? So, yes, there's all kinds of imminent things. God forbid a nuclear war began. Do you want the president to have the ability to do that without consulting Congress to respond to that? I would say yes. But I think killing a general, even a general we don't like and that has been linked to death without any kind of approval by Congress, I think risks the possibility of it escalating to war before Congress ever gets involved.
Didn't the president's logic, though, wasn't it that this guy had links to imminent attacks that he was planning and that we were heading those off by taking him out?
Yeah, I guess, but that's what was alleged. But then, you know, when Secretary Pompeo was asked again about it, he says we didn't know where or when. Uh-huh. So it's a little hard to argue something is imminent when we don't know where or when.
Right.
Then there was a discussion of multiple embassies, but then the Secretary of Defense said he saw no intelligence. We had a briefing, and in the briefing, the most insulting thing to the Constitution was that the administration argued that when Congress voted to go after Saddam Hussein in 2002, that justified them killing an Iranian general in 2020. And so you can see that's ludicrous on the face of it. And if that's the justification, then it basically means that they're taking a vote in 2002 to mean that they can do anything they want to within Iraq forever. And they are saying the same for Afghanistan. And that's why I've signed on to the war powers debate, is that to me it's not just about whether they can kill Soleimani. It's whether or not we can continue to fight a war in Afghanistan forever or continue to fight a war in Iraq forever. But also we need to point out the fact that we have liberated Iraq three times. We liberated them from Saddam Hussein. Then there was a Sunni insurgency in 2007. We eliminated that again. So we liberated Iraq again. And then ISIS came along, and the Iraqis were unable to take care of themselves. We liberated them three times. But now how does Iraq repay us? They're allied with Iran. The prime minister went to the funeral of Soleimani,
right,
and has now asked our troops to leave. Sounds to me like they're ungrateful as hell, and they ought to stew in their own juices, and we ought to come home. And people say, if we come home, they'll kill each other. And I say, well, they've been killing each other
for a long time
before we were there. They're going to kill each other after we leave. Let's bring the troops home, not risk their lives, and have that money to be spent on problems here at home.
Yeah. See, I agreed with taking out Soleimani, but I agree with the further part of this, the second part of this discussion, and that is we need to get the hell out of there. And I appreciate that there are people that are bringing up these questions, because I think a lot of Americans, I was asked on Fox News about this, they were like, what are people saying in the heartland, you know? And I'm like, well, I think people are relieved the president, you know, drew a red line and backed it up, but I think there's a lot of concern, especially in a state like ours, Kentucky, where we have a lot of veterans. When are we going to get out of these endless wars? And I think you're bringing up the fact that we've got to stop and start thinking about what's our exit strategy from the Middle East, because I hadn't thought of it from the perspective you just mentioned. Three times we've liberated them. How many times do we have to sacrifice our blood and treasure for people that apparently are not appreciating any of what we're doing?
Yeah, and the president knows where I'm coming from on this. I spoke with the president this week. I do trust him. I think he doesn't want another big war in the Middle East, and I think he would like to bring the troops home. But he needs to be convinced that there's enough support out there to support him. In Washington, see, it's sort of the opposite. The Republicans up here, 90% of them want to stay at war forever. They're so wedded to war, and they think, oh, right, no, we'll be overrun at home if we're not, we don't have troops and ongoing, you know, missions everywhere around the world. And but the people at home, I think, are different. Anytime you do a poll of veterans across America, majority of veterans and even the majority of those who served in Iraq now question whether or not the Iraq war was the best thing.
Yeah. Yeah. When you look back on it, before I let you go, just one other thing on impeachment. How long do you think this whole process will take now that the articles are going to be in front of the Senate? How does this process work? You guys vote on whether to allow witnesses? Do you vote on the articles? What do you think is the timeline and how does it functionally work?
I think the first vote will be on sort of the procedure, and all 53 Republicans are going to vote to hear opening arguments from both sides, questions submitted from the senators, and then to have a vote on witnesses at that point. I think the Democrats will try to force the issue on witnesses at the very beginning, but I think all 53 Republicans are going to vote against making a decision on witnesses at the beginning. They want to wait till after opening arguments. At the end of opening arguments, it's unclear to me what will happen. If they vote to have witnesses, I've told them, that's fine, but we're not just going to hear from witnesses from the Democrats. The president's going to get to hear witnesses. So I'm an all or none, basically. We either hear all the witnesses or we hear none of the witnesses. Frankly, I'd rather hear none of them because I think we need to get done with this trial. But if we're going to hear from people who don't like the president, like John Bolton, I think we have to hear from everyone. And so if we hear from everyone, I'll produce a motion. Once they decide we're going to have witnesses, I'll have a motion that says that the president can call any witnesses that he deems necessary. I'm not going to name them or limit the president. I'm just going to say if we're going to have witnesses, the president gets to call his. I don't know if that motion can pass or not. No Democrats will vote for that because Democrats are really dishonest about this. They want only their witnesses, but they're not going to vote to let the president call the Bidens in or the whistleblower. So it's a game they're playing, and I think they should be called out on their game.
Yeah.
But I'm still hopeful we can get enough Republicans to stay together just to say, look, we've heard the arguments. It's time to be done with this.
Agreed. When you were a kid running around doing things kids do, did you ever think you'd be part of an impeachment trial of the president of the United States of America?
No, I thought I never did. I was probably thinking about whether it's legal or illegal to steal signs on the baseball field. But anyway,
love it.
Senator, but I got to run.
Yep.
They're calling me off, so we'll do this again.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate you very much. Thanks, Senator Paul.
All right.
All right. Senator Rand Paul, and again, just to reiterate, I personally agreed with taking out Soleimani. I think that I've talked to enough people that felt like the intelligence was there, but I 100% agree with it's time to bring the troops home, and we don't want the president of the United States, whoever he is and whatever party he belongs to have the authority to put us into a war. And I think what Senator Paul is saying in this whole situation was, you know, look, there has to be, obviously the president has to be able to respond to an imminent threat. But beyond that, Congress has a role and a responsibility constitutionally to get involved and to debate. And so it's good that we have senators like Mike Lee and Senator Rand Paul. Even if we disagree with them about Soleimani, it's good that we have these guys saying, hey, pull the reins a little bit. We don't want to go headlong into World War III. Anyway, appreciate Senator Rand Paul joining us. We'll have more episodes upcoming. I am Leland Conway, The Disruption Zone.